Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's already Tuesday. The week is flying by. Is it? Pew!
Pew! And a beautiful day at that. Paul Douglas in the house. Dan Cook back from his vacation. Great to have you. I'm Jordana Green. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday.
A lot of news.
Oh, my gosh.
Big surprise.
The Saudi thing is exploding. We're still waiting. Are they going to admit to that? Are they going to say they did it? And then the real question, what do we as Americans do about it? If anything, we started this conversation, of course, yesterday. We're going to continue it today, but we're bringing on a guest, Ken Adelman. It was a former deputy U.S. ambassador to the U.N. under Ronald Reagan. He served with Reagan many years. He also was at Reykjavik when Ronald Reagan was there, ending the Cold War. He's written a book called Reagan at Reykjavik, and we're so grateful to have him on the show. Ken Adelman, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jordana. And the book is becoming a movie, so we're happy about that, too.
Fantastic.
Good for you.
Do you get any part in directing or consulting on the movie?
No, I'm executive producer, which means next to nothing. But at least gives me some say in the movie production. And they're looking at directors right now.
Well, fantastic.
So, it's a great topic and it's a great time because people are worried about overseas the security. And, Ronald Reagan has just been elevated very high over the years. And, the story is a great story. It has lots of ups and downs and importance and great characters.
Yes. What's the name of the movie?
The name of the movie is not decided yet. The name of the book is Reagan at Reykjavik.
Okay.
And if you can spell Reykjavik, yeah, I'll give you a free copy.
Reykjavik.
I have a copy of my home. You can borrow it. But we can also buy it.
Oh, boy.
Okay,
Reykjavik is the capital of Iceland.
Right.
Capital city of 125,000.
Okay.
Ken,
and
let's talk about...
the whole country was 250,000.
Ken, let's talk about this situation with Saudi Arabia. You know, as I was watching this morning, we opened this up to our listeners. Should we sanction Saudi Arabia, provided that they, were involved in this? And I thought of you and I thought, okay, if Ken was still working at the UN, if he was working into this current administration, what, as an ambassador to the UN, would you tell the administration to do?
I think the approach of shunning people when they do something that is pretty disgusting is a very good approach. So it's not anything like sanctions. The trouble is that Saudi Arabia has had abysmal behavior since its origin, basically. It is a totalitarian, and, they just made a big deal that women can drive after, this summer for the first time, and then promptly arrested any women who were protesting before about the ability to drive. So they give in to the demands and they arrest the people that wanted those demands. And it is just a terrible, terrible place. Okay. And the fact is that they would take somebody who worked for years with the Saudi government, was a spokesman here in Washington for the ambassador. And when he enters the Turkish consulate, the Saudi consulate in Turkey, doesn't come out and presumably was killed in there and dismembered in there. Now, President Trump says it's rogue killers. I don't know how many rogue killers wander the halls of the Saudi embassy in Turkey. Certainly, they don't wander the hall of any embassy I've ever seen.
With bone cutters.
Bone cutters from the Saudis. So the idea of Saudi Arabia has wanted legitimacy, even though it's an illegitimate regime and an awful regime. One of the things they did to be legitimate is they sent every year people to Davos, the World Economic Forum, in Switzerland, and they decided to have their own Davos. Well, they have gobs of money because of petrodollars, and so they get legitimacy by having a big powwow with all the most important people in the world once a year. Just so happens that it's coming next week. Mm-hmm. And the idea that Westerners and prominently the American business leaders would shun them and not show up, I think is a very good, effective means of showing total disgust with what they have done.
Ken, let's put arms sales aside. Let's put the economics aside for just a minute. Some people have made the argument, you know, take a deep breath. We're not seeing the forest through the trees. We need Saudi Arabia as we exert more pressure on Iran, which is also an arch enemy of Saudi Arabia. And my understanding was this administration was looking to Saudi Arabia for support to tighten the screws on Iran. What happens now?
Paul, it's always important in foreign affairs to decide who's doing what for whom, okay? Yes, we don't like Iran for very good reasons. But the Saudis don't like Iran for even better reasons, and they're closer by. And they have a longer competition. So the idea that Saudi Arabia is doing us a favor by opposing Iran gets it backwards. We're doing the Saudis a favor by supporting their opposition to Iran and mustering all kinds of steps and actions in the Middle East to try to curb Iranian ambitions. So we're not doing them any great favor on that. It's in their interest to oppose Iran, okay? The one thing that Saudi Arabia has gobs of is petrodollars, okay? So they buy, you know, billions and billions of dollars in military arms from the U.S. Defense companies, which is very nice. It provides jobs and technology and an alliance of sorts. It's an alliance, even though we've sold a million, billions of dollars worth of defense equipment, they haven't been able to use it at all.
They've used it on Yemen, haven't they?
Well, what happened in Yemen is they've been very, very brutal. And if you, you know, just start bombing people like mad, that's pretty easy to do. That's not a real defense policy or technology. That's, you know, going and just bombing a bunch of people. So the fact is that they buy lots of stuff. And they're buying lots of stuff, helps many American businesses. And, you know, you don't want to cut that off. But that's why I say shunning them, not going to their big hootenanny in the desert that gives them legitimacy, and otherwise just turning your back on them in many ways without sanctioning them, I think is a very effective program.
And do you think it's enough, A, for the American people, and then for the global political the optics of it? Do you think shunning is enough? Because sanctions, we sanctioned Russia when they killed one of their spies in the UK. Would this be a weird double standard, and does it make us look weak if we don't impose sanctions?
It is at least the start. If we had absolute proof, which to me, you don't need absolute proof in a case like this, but it gives you a place, Jordana, to start from, and then you can ratchet up from there. If the Turks come out with all kinds of evidence that Khashoggi was just massacred in the Saudi embassy in Turkey, then you could ratchet up to sanctions. And what kind of sanctions? You wouldn't want economic sanctions so much as to keep out certain individuals from coming to the United States or investing in the United States or having financial dealings at all with the United States. Those are the kind of sanctions we have with Russia, that certain individuals that we have said have done nefarious things are banned from coming to the United States or investing or having financial dealings.
Ken, and I realize this is going to be your personal opinion, but you've been there, you know the region, you know the geopolitics. Why, in your humble estimation, was Jamal Khashoggi killed? I mean, it seems like Saudi Arabia is undergoing gradual, grudging, some would say, reforms under Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince. But was it that he was trying to move the needle too fast, or was it that they didn't want to suffer any criticism at all of the regime?
He's doing two is making these baby steps of reform, basically putting Saudi Arabia, I'd say, in the smack dab in the middle of the 18th century, or maybe the beginning of the 19th century. It's a very, very backwards company where the Saudi citizens don't work. They practically do nothing. Anybody who does any work is a Palestinian or a Filipino or, you know, a migrant worker that basically has no rights at all. So he was trying to, and they don't produce anything. You know, they have oil under their feet in the sand, and, you know, for some reason God decided to give these people oil and make them fabulously rich without them doing anything. They don't find the oil, they don't refine the oil, they don't drill the oil, they do nothing. And they get a big paycheck, okay? And so what they have been doing is living on this. So the new leader comes in, and he says, you know, let's try to produce something that we have of value. Let's try to give some Saudis a work and make them productive in life. But he will not tolerate any dissent. So when the Canadians peep something that I forgot of total insignificance about Saudi Arabia, which was very minimal in terms of what the Saudis actually do and how they treat people, the Saudi government went crazy and started all kinds of sanctions against Canada for that. So this is a regime that is taking baby steps from two centuries ago to modernize, but not in up to today's time, to up to about 100 years ago, and will not tolerate any dissent, domestically or foreign. So they go crazy on that. And this was a reporter who had worked for the Saudi government for years, was in and out of government for years, and wrote critical arguments saying just what I'm saying now, that this is not a free country, that this is not a decent country, that this is not a respectable country, and they couldn't tolerate it.
Ken Edelman, a former deputy U.S. ambassador to the U.N., now involved in the making of the movie of his book, Reagan at Reykjavik. Am I saying it right, Ken? Reykjavik?
Reykjavik?
You did it right. Now try to spell it.
No. That I can't. Absolutely.
Too far.
Absolutely not. We're grateful for your opinions today, and thanks again for your time on the show and your expertise.
Okay. Great questions.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for your perspective, Ken. You bet. Good luck.
Bye now.
I mean, if he has fascinating insight that I think we haven't heard before. I didn't realize the Saudis did nothing. I mean, I know they have a lot of oil and they're really rich. I didn't realize they didn't refine it. They don't dig it. They don't have an economy other than digging up the oil.
It's
or
like a,
somebody else do it, digging
like
up the oil.
A family that inherits unimaginable wealth, right?
I still wouldn't want to be a Saudi resident, I'll tell you. Very happy being
you could
an
drive
American.
Now. You could, although, maybe not you specifically, but... You could drive.
Oh, my goodness. Fascinating. We're also going to talk more about this in the 5 o'clock hour. As you heard, you know, Ken Edelman was saying that he doesn't think that sanctions would necessarily do the trick, but shunning might. We'll definitely want to hear what you think in the 5 o'clock hour. It's also 324. We'll be back in just a moment with a little thing on baby wearing. Paul knows all about this, I promise.
Yeah.
He's an expert.
Really into that.
We'll be right back. Baby wearing, up next. I wonder if they do that in Saudi Arabia.
I doubt it.
I doubt it.
But, yeah, coming up after the break, somebody I adore, she's in charge of our operations at Predictix, one of the two weather tech companies I'm involved with, Susie Martin. She's a meteorologist, and out of necessity, she brought her two-year-old to work one day. I'm not exactly sure why. I think her daycare provider wasn't available.
It happens.
So she brought Ansel and wore him on her back doing the weather. Mm-hmm. And
she
again,
went viral.
Out of necessity, and this thing went viral. And the baby wearing, why physiologically it's... Emotionally, it's good for the baby, apparently.
For the baby.
I didn't know that.
Well, she's going to join us, and she's going to school us about that. So
yes,
we'll,
she will.
We'll learn all about that. So I'm looking forward to that.
Get me an edumacation.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, Charles Blow wrote an op-ed called White Male Victimization. What is that? And are you feeling that in your everyday life? And you don't have to be a white male to be feeling it. You could be feeling it from a white male. Maybe it's all a load of nothing. But we're going to share some of his op-ed with you. And then we're going to open the phones because people are saying this is a response to Donald Trump's presidency. Or is the reason why Donald Trump is president.
In my hunch, it's a response to something that goes way beyond.
Way beyond.
Donald Trump, this administration, the changes that we see. But we want you to weigh in. Mm-hmm. We want to get your thoughts, your opinion. I have mixed feelings about this story, but I thought it was important enough that we should share this and get listeners' comments.
Also want to tell you that Timberwolves season finally underway. Find out if Jimmy Butler will be a part of the team as the Timberwolves start their regular season tomorrow in San Antonio. John Folkey will have the pregame at 7. Alan Horton will bring you the rest of the action. And we are going to be at the Skyway Studio on Friday as they
I'm
home
suiting
game.
Up. They're putting me in.
Actually, that might not be a bad idea this season.
It's a sign of the apocalypse.
I don't know. It might
why
not
is,
be a bad
idea. Why is Douglas wearing a Wolves jersey?
Dan, myself,
that would
Paul.
Be very, very bad. If it comes to the point where they put us in.
Got a problem.
No, they're going to have a good season.
Yes, they are.
Take a deep breath.
We're feeling
it's
positive.
It's going to be fine.
So we're going to be over at the Skyway Studio looking forward to that. Given the Timberwolves a little WCCO love, we are your home of the Timberwolves. And, of course, you can hear the first game of the season right here at 7 o'clock is the pregame. That's tomorrow night. Let's take a little break for news. And when we get back, Susie Martin will be joining us. Oh, and before I have to tell you that the Prep Sports Spotlight is brought to you by Old Dutch Foods.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Jordana and Paul, happy Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in. Get to work with some great meteorologists. We have some studios down in lovely Eden Prairie, and running the show day in and day out is meteorologist Susie Martin. She's been with me for nearly 10 years, and she keeps the wheels on the bus.
God bless you, Suze.
Hi.
Hey, Suze.
How are you guys?
Good, good, good. Thank you for joining us today. And
yeah, no problem.
Why? We should set this up a little bit for listeners. When did this happen where you took Ansel to work and you wore him on your back? Do we have that on our Facebook?
Oh, I think. No, not yet, but we'll get it up. Okay?
We will get that because you have to see this. Mm-hmm. It is amazing. But what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, so it was International Baby Wearing Week, the first week of October. And last year, I decided to promote the practice of baby wearing, which is the spirit of the whole celebration, on air with my son. At the time, he was 9 months old. We posted it. It did well. It was very well received. And I thought it would be fun to do it again 1 year later. I had no idea how far it would go. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost up to 1.7 million views or something.
On Facebook?
Yes. So it truly has gone viral.
Well, I love the fact that he's yawning and sleeping on your back at one point. Like, he just fell asleep.
He just didn't care.
Right. He doesn't care. He's
on
TV.
I think the funny part about it is that he did fall asleep in the middle of it. So I think that's what really has captured a lot of attention because people thought it was funny. He let out a huge yawn at the beginning and then he just zonked out.
But Susie, this isn't something you just did for Baby Wearing Week. I follow you on Facebook and on Twitter and we're also friends, but I know that you've been wearing Ansel since he was born. So how did you get into this idea of wearing your baby? I used to have a baby Bjorn when my kids were little. I mean, is it the same? Is it different now? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, baby wearing is basically just carrying your baby in the carrier. It's basically just physical contact with your child. So it doesn't matter how you do it, whether it's a baby Bjorn or in my case, I use the wrap for the video. But it is something that I've done even when he was a newborn. I think I started at 1 week old. It was just a great bonding experience for us, especially for those newborn months. And then it just became kind of a practical choice, and it was something that was a source of comfort for him and still is the case. I certainly don't wear him as much as I used to because he does run, he walks,
he's
very independent. Mm-hmm. He likes to remind me of his independence, but he does still need his cuddles, and it just helps me get things done sometimes when he really wants his mom, but mom's busy.
And it's good for kids, right? It's good for young kids? to be worn?
Yes.
I mean, that contact is good, right? That's bonding time.
Exactly. Everyone knows that skin to skin is very important with infants. But research shows that they cry less. They are more comforted when held. I mean, most people know when you have a crying baby, usually they want to be held. Mm-hmm. And now my baby's not as much of a baby, but toddlers have big feelings and still very much need to be comforted. And in some cases, that physical contact and touch really centers him and brings him back, his levels back down.
Yeah, there's tons of research on this.
Is there an age restriction? Could my wife wear me?
Okay, stop it.
That's just creepy.
Stop it. Yes.
All right. I had to ask. I should have thought that instead of said it. But
yes, there you go. That's a good example of when you should not open your mouth.
Susie, and you've gotten bizarre media requests. Ellen has reached out, right?
Yeah, like I said, it went viral to the true definition. I've done about 10 interviews now worldwide from the Ellen Show here. And it's a pre-interview, so we'll see if I end up going to the Ellen Show. That would be so fun. But everywhere from BBC covered it to CBS Inside Edition, Australia. I was on a few radio shows out there. So, yeah, it's been interesting. I had no idea it would go this far.
Well, good for you. I mean, you're really a great spokeswoman, of course, for this. And, you know, you have to intertwine your work with your baby and your home life. I mean, you got to do it to get that both jobs done. So good for you, Suze.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very impressed. And I want you to stay on the line. I know you worked Hurricane Michael. You were there. You did updates. You did briefings for some of our corporate customers. But there were a few things that made me do a triple take with Michael, and we're sort of doing our weather therapy a little bit early. So you can help me provide some therapy, Suze.
No problem.
And I know you know this, but Hurricane Michael, fourth strongest hurricane to hit the United States based on wind speed, third strongest based on pressure in modern recorded history. It was a Category 3 when it pushed into Georgia. That's how strong this thing was.
It's incredible. And I think Florida Panhandle was the strongest hurricane to ever strike that region. And it's amazing how fast it intensified and how quickly things went south as it went over those warmer waters. But, Paul, I think one of the most fascinating things, and I don't know if you caught this or not, is how it went over the Carolinas. And normally when the center of the hurricanes are over land, they weaken because they lose that water as the base, of course, mm-hmm. of the energy. But in a rare situation, like this is just such an anomaly, but Michael actually strengthened. Some theories say that it interacted with an incoming cold front, and it just was this perfect storm that actually allowed winds to intensify to 70, 80 plus miles per hour in Virginia, North Carolina. I thought that was really interesting.
And you still have standing water across much of the Carolinas from Florence. I mean, a lot of towns still have not recovered. So you still have water available in theory, not the deep layer of water that you normally have with a hurricane. But you're right. This thing went from tropical storm to almost a Category 5, missed it by 2 miles an hour in 73 hours. 10-foot storm surge at Mexico Beach just east of Panama City. 2 million customers lost power. And Virginia actually led the list with over 500,000 people losing power there. And I found this interesting. The weather models do a better job with hurricane track than with intensity. NHC's 72-hour forecast was off by only 10 miles. So we had a pretty good collective idea where this thing was going. I think a lot of people were still caught with their Dopplers down.
Oh, boy.
With the thing intensifying almost to a 5. And some, you know, a lot of theories. The water was unusually warm. And I've noticed this, that when these storms enter the Gulf, which is relatively shallow, the water heats up faster. And it's like jet fuel for these hurricanes. What else struck you as unusual about Michael?
I think just the intensity of it and just the fact that we've had two super significant tropical events like this in the U.S. and in recent, you know, the last couple of years have certainly, that's really raising my alarm bells, ringing my bells at least. And just Michael's just one more example of what's to come, I'm sure, with the warming trends that we're seeing.
We've had four Category 4 or stronger landfalls in the last 14 months, and all of them experienced rapid intensification right before coming ashore. And that's one of our, you know, nightmare scenarios, because if the storm is a Category 1 as it's approaching, a lot of people say, well, it's a 1. We've lived through a 1 before. Let's stay. We can ride this thing out. And then if overnight in the span of, you know, 12, 24 hours, the thing strengthens to a 4, it's a whole different beast. Had this storm hit Tampa, you know, St. Pete, or God forbid the Miami area, or really anywhere along the coast other than the panhandle, I mean, we'd be looking at probably an even more horrific aftermath right now.
I have a feeling, Paul, it's just a matter of time before we see that nightmare come true.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I love Florida. Who doesn't love Florida? But there are probably areas down there where people shouldn't be living because, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. These coastal communities get devastated. FEMA money comes pouring in. FEMA rightfully comes to the rescue. And many of these towns rebuild just the same way that they were before the storm
hit.
Well,
then does zoning have to change so they won't be allowed to rebuild in those areas? Or they have to rebuild like hurricane-proof houses like the Sand Palace we talked about yesterday?
In some cases, local cities are actually buying property. They're making people, yeah, you know, fair offers. What is your home worth? Okay, we'll cut you a check, move. And then they restore, they raise the homes, they level the homes, and restore the dunes so that there's some sort of natural protection when these storm surges come ashore. But how do you tell people to move away from the water? We all want to live near the water.
If your house is now in pieces on the beach and doesn't exist, that's how you tell them.
But if you have FEMA money coming in and you can rebuild the same house and maybe make some improvements, maybe put on a sun porch, there are people down there that have gamed the system in Alabama and some. I read one story in Alabama, Dauphine Island. Somebody 13 times went back to FEMA. And every time they rebuilt their home, there was another addition. There was another perk.
Well, then what's the insanity there? It's the FEMA money that they're getting. It's the taxpayers'
it's
money.
Our money.
It's our money that's helping rebuild a house that's getting demolished every 3 years. So that's the insanity that needs to stop.
There's no FEMA money tree.
Right. And if you can't get insurance for that and you can't get FEMA money and your house is in a shambles, you're going to go rebuild that house somewhere else.
Parts of Iowa are safe. You can rebuild that home in Iowa, but don't be near a floodplain. Susie, I'm sorry for Jordana's rant.
I know. Sorry about that, Susie. Yeah.
No, it's perfectly fine.
But, I mean, you grew up in Florida, and you experienced this. You went to Miami, right? I mean,
I did, yes. But, and I've been through several hurricanes. Nothing like – I've never been through a solid major hurricane like this. But, yes, I think there's a level of cockiness with Floridians, which is interesting because when we were tracking Michael, my research meteorologist, DJ here, was mm-hmm. commented to me, he's like, why are there no evacuations yet? We were just waiting, and we felt like they were a little bit late to pull the trigger. I don't know the details of why, but you know, we were very concerned here. And there is this level of cockiness I know from being in Florida, where okay, we can handle a 1, we can handle a 2, we can handle a 3. I think with that late intensification, you know, forecast towards the end, that's when people are like, oh my goodness, like no, this is a really really big deal. But by that point, it's too late to do
anything.
Yeah, and one of our listeners rightfully points out that the building codes were actually relaxed on the Florida Panhandle. They're much more stringent across the rest of Florida, the peninsula, but the Panhandle, I guess, I don't know, the local builders got together and lobbied and got the codes relaxed so they didn't have to make it as hurricane resistant.
Oh, they're paying the price now.
So, hey, Susie. Thank you for joining us. Let's make this a habit. And thank you for making us aware of baby wearing. And congratulations on that going viral.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susie.
Give Ansel our best.
Will do. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. It's 3:48 Wicks and Jewelers time. Don't miss the biggest watch event in the Midwest. And I've been there for this. And it is amazing. Their watch fair is coming at Wicks and Jewelers October 26th and 27th. So, look at me.
Uh-oh. I'm looking.
Do I look anxious?
No, you don't look anxious. You have a very calm demeanor.
No, but I'm deep down. I'm anxious.
Feeling anxious?
All of us.
Am I making you
are feeling. Well, yeah, you make me a little nervous every day, but
I've grown. She makes anybody. She comes into contact.
I've grown accustomed to that. I kind of like it
nervous.
In a weird way. But this whole white male victimization anxiety.
Thing.
I mean, just pouring gasoline onto the flames mm-hmm. and. But he's trying to make a point, and
the author is trying to make
the author, a point. And we'll dive into that at 4:10 after CBS News and after Laura.
It's an op-ed in the New York Times, which Dan has posted on the CCO Facebook page and the Paul and Jordana Facebook page. So, hey, if you have a minute, take a look at it.
Right.
And then we're going to dive in together at 4:10.
I want to hear what you think about this. I think it's much bigger than blaming white males. I think there's something much bigger going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to hear your thoughts.
And the crux of it is, if things are better for women or minorities, then things must be worse for white men.
That's a zero-sum game.
Right.
Right. If women are gaining, someone's if people winning, of color losing. Are gaining, mm-hmm. then somebody has mm-hmm. to lose.
So, but is that true? It's his hypothesis, but it did make Paul think about this.
It made me even more anxious.
We have Fleetwood Mac tickets to give
yes.
away.
Yes. Yes. How cool is that? When are they coming, Dan? Do you know?
Not the
to when they spot. Feel like it.
Yeah.
The concert is coming up at the XL Energy Center Monday, October the 22nd. So
oh,
not that
all right.
far away.
But fun story about Fleetwood Mac and Beyond the Headlines, and
yeah.
we will be giving those tickets away at some point throughout the show.
Absolutely. The lawyers are excited about what's happening with Fleetwood Mac. But their music is still amazing, and you get to listen to it. Hope you win those tickets.
And they still sound good.
They do.
So all is right with the world. We will. Oh, do we? Yeah. Oh, hold on 1 second. Dan says Dan and Hopkins is on the phone. Hey, Dan and Hopkins,
hey,
how are
Dana
you?
Hey, Dan and Paul.
Hey, Dan.
You, good to hear you.
Thanks
hey,
for calling.
I think we have a thank you for taking my call. I think we have a bipartisan idea that I think the Democrats and Republicans would agree on. If you decide to live again on have oceanfront property mm-hmm. in areas that historically are dangerous and have hurricanes, you are on your own with whatever insurance you can muster. The taxpayer should not have to
amen, brother.
For you.
Amen.
And
amen.
Why would anybody disagree with that?
Well,
right?
There's a sense of entitlement. If you're self-insured, if you're making enough money or worth enough money that you can rebuild on your own without government assistance, more power to you. But I could not agree with your premise more, Dan. Yeah, we shouldn't keep bailing out people who keep rebuilding in spots that are becoming increasingly perilous.
One of our texters says FEMA should only build a house once and stop rescuing the people in Florida.
Yeah.
Good thoughts. I think he's right. Bipartisan, it could happen.
Yeah.
All right, we have to hit the news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back on CCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.